We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
Hi, guys. Happy Labor Day. It's been a little bit of a crazy day around our house. And as we mentioned in the show last week, we lost our nanny. So our lives just got a little bit more complicated than we anticipated. I personally have been hustling to put the finishing touches on my first full-length book, which will be released in the next couple weeks, I hope, 3 to 4 weeks. And we're now in the period of editing and layout and all of those things. So Rob is actually in this very moment interviewing a nanny candidate. So I am going to do the podcast by myself in the form of reading you the introduction of the book. It is totally not edited. And in fact, I think this is the first significant reread I've done since I wrote this section. So here it goes. I hope you enjoy it. We couldn't solve the problem of shared custody. Our son was 18 months old. I wanted to take a job at Yale in Connecticut. He wanted to return to California, and we both wanted to have plenty of time with our son. Our lives had begun to unravel sometime in November of 2017, just as the first cold front came in. The heat in our tiny apartment went out. We bundled the baby under layers of sweaters and puffer jackets as we fought with the landlord over a rental contract. Our days became a constant battle of who did what, who said what, and who was going to figure out how to pay for what. And as if that wasn't enough, I spent those cold winter months flying from East Coast to West Coast, enduring grueling two-day interviews for tenure-track faculty jobs. And then my grandpa died, and I was really tired. There weren't enough hours in the day, in the year, for that matter. But there also wasn't any chance that I would back down, take a break, or rest. As a doctoral candidate in clinical psychology, I knew what I needed. I was desperately in need of sleep, quiet, and time spent meaningfully connected with the people that I loved. I needed to rest my frantic mind and engage with my work from a more focused, grounded place. As I now know, after years of working with therapy and consulting clients, knowing and doing are different phenomena. I could not give myself permission to do the things that I knew I needed. My research fellowship at Yale University School of Medicine was ripe with opportunities, and I wanted to make the most of them as I launched the prestigious academic career I thought I'd always wanted. There were endless seminars and writing opportunities, mountains of papers to read. There were networking events, guest lectures from field leaders, and study sessions, opportunities to sit with brilliant people and talk about my ideas. There was enough work to keep me busy for 100 hours each week. The only downtime I could afford were the moments I gave to my little boy. I didn't feel like I had any time for my husband. We met on the track team at UC Davis. Rob watched me walk across the field one day and just happened to overhear my conversation with the coach about having to take calculus during afternoon training. Ever the entrepreneur, Rob graciously volunteered to run with me in the mornings. And that was the beginning of our story. We spent hours literally running in circles, chatting, teasing, competing, and eventually coming to know each other's heartaches and each other's dreams. Rob's father worked for a large electrical contractor in the Silicon Valley. Rob's life plan was to finish his degree and become an executive in that same company. Even as a college student, he had a plan mapped out for his life. He would start with a degree in electrical engineering and go through a 3-year executive apprenticeship with the CEO of the company. He had it all mapped out, and he did it all flawlessly. He executed on his plan. After years of friendship, and in my case, a year spent in Africa, we began to talk about building a life together, a family, of sort of writing a story of our own. And that's when we realized that maybe Rob's Silicon Valley dreams were a bit out of our price range. At $1,400 a month to rent a mobile home in Cupertino, it just didn't seem like the right idea for two people fresh out of college. Rob turned away from his carefully crafted plan to his other love, coding. We got married. We set up a house in Sacramento, a much more affordable city. He worked for a startup, became a consultant, worked for a city government, worked for another startup. He maximized on his pretty amazing combination of technical mind and interpersonal skills so that he was a really incredibly valued member of whatever team he was on. But even with all that success in business and working for other people, he always had an entrepreneurial side project. The first one was a membership site. He did a lot with real estate for a time. Since he was doing such a great job following his dreams, I figured it was about time for me to get started on mine. So I began a doctoral program in Southern California working on a PhD in clinical psych. So we were plugging along. He was hopping from company to company, being an entrepreneur on the side. I spent my early mornings in the library, reading, studying, learning to become a clinician, learning to become a researcher. And after 7 years of marriage, we had our son, our first son. People thought that I was pretty crazy to become a mother during a doctoral program, but per the usual, I ignored the naysayers and because I was so sure that I could do it. And I was sure that we could handle it. I was sure that Rob and I had the energy, the emotional connection, the drive, and the resources that we needed. And actually, I was right, especially for the first year. Rob worked from home half-time. I spent the early morning hours writing my dissertation. 2 days a week, I worked as a training psychologist at a veterans hospital. We carefully controlled our time. We had tremendous freedom to organize our lives and the needs of our family. We also had a great network of friends. So there were plenty of aunties and uncles who were happy to borrow our son for an hour or so I could take a shower or go to yoga class. And it worked. All the way up until it didn't. So when our oldest son was about a year old is when I was offered the fellowship at Yale. It was the last step in my doctoral experience, and I was lucky enough to land a spot in, of course, one of the most prestigious programs in the country. It meant a move from California to the East Coast and a lifestyle change, but Rob and I were both pretty elated about the opportunity. We were ready. We packed up our little Southern California bungalow and made the long trek to the Northeast. And when we arrived, I was delighted. I was so full of energy and hope for my future. Everything seemed to be working out perfectly for my career path, for my dreams. I was happy, but I was stressed. Suddenly, the long afternoons in the park were replaced by endless hours behind my computer. And any time we had previously spent working on our relationship and our family just kind of disappeared. And I've actually done a lot of self-reflection about what I was feeling at that time in my life. And looking back, I realized I had a fierce inferiority complex. I was a poor kid from the forests of rural Northern California. I had no academic pedigree, no connections, no experience operating the world of grant-funded research. I immersed myself in my work with the ferocity of someone who really had something to prove. And at that time, I was pretty willing to sacrifice almost anything to reach my goals. In retrospect, I think I almost sacrificed everything. My family, my marriage, my relationship with my child, definitely my emotional health. Just as I was ramping up my work to a record level, Rob was growing increasingly tired of working for consulting clients. He, like you probably, had read the 4-hour work week and definitely started dreaming about different ways of working and living. He began to blog. He took on only the most lucrative consulting gigs so that he could build a financial arsenal to do something that he called products. I didn't really understand what he was doing or thinking, but to be honest, I'm not sure how well I was listening. And the disconnect quickly became a driving wedge between us. To an outsider, we looked like the perfect picture of young talent. We had the education, the collective abilities, and the potential to really go somewhere, to really do something with our lives. We appeared to have it all together. But secretly, we were really lonely and resentful and very tired. Neither of us felt understood or cared about, and neither of us felt supported. Our jobs consumed all of our time. All of our emotional energy went to our son. We came very close to shutting down our life together. But for the sake of our son, we decided to give it one more try. It meant that I needed to turn down a postdoctoral fellowship at Yale. And instead, we moved to Boston for yet another new beginning. If you're someone that's followed our story for some time, then you may know some of what came after for Rob and for me. Several successful startups, MicroConf, a couple of podcasts, a PhD, another child. And had we gotten divorced at that time in our lives, I think it would have been a really great tragedy. we were well suited to each other, and our partnership has allowed us to accomplish more together than we could have possibly done individually. But it took work, and lots of tough choices. And by now, Rob and I have spent years trying to figure out what we consider the ultimate question for business owners and entrepreneurs. How can you do the best, most meaningful work and have a life that you love at the same time? That question and the many answers we have to it are contained in the pages of this book. This book started to take shape in my mind during the cold, dark Connecticut winter, and then came into fruition over the years as I emerged from that dark time in my life. That season of our lives epitomizes the problem this book attempts to steer you away from. We were disconnected, burnt out people who were longing for a more creative, productive, joyful life. This book is about how to be an entrepreneur and be healthy, productive, and connected. Yeah, it is possible. It's about being successful with your business and with your relationships. It's about being an integrated person, someone who thrives in work and life. It's about learning to listen to yourself, learning to trust your own wisdom. It's about facing the hard parts of the entrepreneurial life. It's about solving problems, coping, and managing those big giant monsters in your mind. And it's about giving yourself permission to craft the life that you want. We wrote the book for entrepreneurs and their significant others. And we kind of broadly define entrepreneurs as people responsible or those who wish to be responsible for their own paycheck. So perhaps you own a software or productized consulting company. Maybe you're a freelance writer or designer. Or maybe you've raised a round of funding to start a high growth startup. Perhaps you own a boutique law firm or sell organic lotion on Amazon. The content of the business is not as important as what it means to be responsible for running your life, your life. Whether you've built or are striving to build a business that allows you to be in control of your life, you will run into moments like we did back in 2007. Our hope is that this book prepares you for them and perhaps helps you avoid them altogether. So that is a little taste of the book. The book generally is more tactical and strategic than us sharing stories about our lives. But there's definitely a lot of stories included in the book because, you know, who doesn't like stories? It's unedited and a little bit raw. And even as I was reading it, there are some things I'm going to go back and change and adjust a little bit. But that is kind of the introduction to what we want to offer in the book. And if it's something that you are interested in, we'll have a landing page up for pre-sales very soon, hopefully by the time this podcast is released. And you can find that on zenfounder.com. I promise we are not turning the podcast into just like a series of commercials for stuff that we're selling. It's just a weird season of life where there's a lot launching at the same time. So we're talking a lot about that on the podcast, but we have a roadmap for the fall that I think will be really good and really interesting. So hang in there with us. Please buy the book. That'd be awesome. If not, then the podcast will always, always be free. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.